If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery. When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Pope Francis said this week that Christmas is not about presents and is about listening to the silent voice of God. Said his secret Santa, "What the hell, man? I got you an iPad!"
From 3D Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth interviews Rachel Brosnahan of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Plus, just for this podcast, Rachel goes backstage to come clean about a deep, dark secret. But first, a closer look.
President Trump is threatening a government shutdown over funding for his border wall just as he faces the most serious legal peril of his presidency. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. It's worth remembering that when 2018 began, we didn't know anything about illegal hush payments to porn stars, a secret resistor inside the Trump administration, or the fact that Rudy Giuliani always looks like he just sat on a box of thumbtacks. When the year began, Republicans controlled all three branches of government, and they were celebrating the passage of a corporate tax cut that lined the pockets of millionaires. And to take a victory lap at the time, Trump turned to his creepiest aide, senior advisor Stephen Miller.
Right.
And Miller decided to go on TV and make the president look good, A, by comparison, and B, by calling him a genius.
On the campaign, I had the chance to travel all across the country with the president, and I saw a man who was a political genius. The reality is the president is a political genius. Of all these so-called political geniuses in Washington, whether it be at the big lobbying firms, or
the only person who's called himself a genius in the last week is the president. But
which happens to be a true statement.
Ugh. Stephen Miller is the only person on Earth who'd be less creepy if he wore a hockey mask. But hey, maybe some of Trump's supporters still thought he was a genius. And yet, in the almost 12 months since that comment, Trump has rambled at length about how people in Finland rake the floors of the forest, left an umbrella outside when he couldn't figure out how to close it, got on Air Force One with toilet paper stuck to his shoe, and said this about a hurricane.
They haven't seen anything like what's coming at us in 25, 30 years, maybe ever. It's tremendously big and tremendously wet.
Tremendously big and tremendously wet sounds like something Stephen Miller would say about Donald Trump. As we've learned this year, the president is just a weird, weird man. He's like a space alien with a head injury who just took his first bong rip. It is a pleasure to meet you, fellow human. I am enjoying the traditional Earth greeting of shaking hands for exactly one full minute. And now let us all display our patriotism by engaging in the customary hugging of the flag. I am normal. But you'd think a political genius could at least figure out a way to deliver on the one thing he repeatedly told his supporters he would absolutely do, and that's build the wall. And yet today, Trump threatened the very real possibility of a government shutdown because he didn't get any money for the wall. In fact, it's finally starting to dawn on his supporters that the wall is never going to happen, and they are very upset about it.
Democrats are going to win on this. There will be no money for the president and his wall this time.
Not a penny. Forget wall. Think border security.
I think that not funding the wall is going to go down as one of the worst things to have happened to this administration. Forget Mueller. The wall has to be built.
I agree.
And this was a scandal that it hasn't been built.
Well, it's very sad. We needed the wall.
That's a real fight. And I don't know that he minds dragging it out for a while.
Okay. Is it something
so
he just
get
needs
a series of 2-week agreements?
Is it something he just needs to give up on, though?
Now, man, they're talking about the wall like they just lost a pet. Trump's going to have a special chat with the Fox and Friends. Mr. Trump, where'd the wall go?
It went to a farm upstate. To live with all the other walls.
Because he knows he's never going to get any money for his wall. Trump has been lying and claiming he's already building it just by putting up some fencing with existing money. But now supporters are starting to figure out that's also a lie. Here's Trump lying about the wall, followed by a very confused Laura Ingraham trying to figure out what he means.
A lot of wall has been built. We don't talk about that, but we might as well start because it's building. It's being built right now, big sections of wall, and we will continue that.
I must have missed the wall being built. What wall? Where's it being built, Tom?
Well, I think what it means, you're upgrading certain parts of the
wall. That's not a wall. Stop saying it's a wall. There's no wall. If you want a wall, say, we don't have the wall. And I know it's bad because he made the promise, but they're not building the wall.
Wow. She went through all 5 stages of grief in 5 seconds. It's like watching someone realize they're in the Matrix in real time. This isn't real. None of this is real. So today, Trump, the political genius, said at the last minute he would not sign a deal to keep the government open. And in response, outgoing House Speaker Paul Ryan scrambled to find a way to get him money for his wall, which is a fitting end to Paul Ryan's career. Ryan has spent all year loyally serving Trump and ignoring his many abuses of power, even openly admitting he doesn't pay attention to Trump scandals.
Mark Sanford yesterday said that, speaking on the Stormy Daniels story, that he said the allegations of hush money are a big deal. First question is, do you agree with that characterization?
I haven't put a second's of thought into this. It's just not on my radar screen.
This must bother you, Access Hollywood, Stormy Daniels, Karen McDougal. At a certain point, it must be embarrassing.
Well, look, I didn't even read the article.
Is it appropriate, in your view, for the White House to invoke executive deny Steve?
I'm not familiar with exactly what happened yesterday. I've been a little busy with some other tasks.
Man, Paul Ryan might be a bad House Speaker, but he'd be a great roommate. Hey, Paul, my friends are coming over to watch a UFC fight, and then my punk band's going to practice. That's cool. I'll be busy with other tasks. Yesterday, in his farewell address, Ryan decried what he called our broken politics. But Ryan is the one who spent 2 years ignoring Trump's many scandals and actively praising Trump in truly absurd ways, like when the GOP passed their corporate tax cut.
Something this big, something this generational, something this profound could not have been done without exquisite presidential leadership.
I'm sorry, did you just use the word exquisite to describe Donald Trump? You're talking about him like he's an art installation at the Guggenheim. He's not exactly a Picasso. I mean, look at him. If he looks like anything, he looks like he was painted by Edward Munch. Although, you know what? He'd fit right in that Salvador Dali painting with all those melting clocks. Watching Ryan frantically try to scrape together money for Trump's border wall is a fitting way for his career to end. Ryan used high-minded rhetoric about the importance of our institutions while Trump degraded those institutions. For example, Ryan had nothing to say when President's lawyer Rudy Giuliani went on TV and literally said that truth isn't truth.
When you tell me that, you know, he should testify because he's going to tell the truth and he shouldn't worry, well, that's so silly because it's somebody's version of the truth, not the truth. He didn't have a conversation
about... Truth is truth. I don't mean to go like...
It isn't truth. Truth isn't truth. The President of the United States says, I didn't...
Truth isn't truth. Mr. Mayor, do you realize what... This is going to become a bad meme.
Don't do this to me.
In every interview, Rudy sounds like a grandpa whose adult children just put him in a nursing home. Don't do this to me! I can live on my own. Just give me a stair lift. Also, can we go back to this part real quick?
No.
This is going to become a bad meme.
Chuck Todd. Why are you talking to this guy about memes? He doesn't know what a meme is. Rudy probably thinks a meme is one of those guys who pretends to be trapped behind an invisible wall. Well, truth is truth, and now the truth is starting to catch up to Rudy and Trump. Like, when we learned recently, the Trump and his former lawyer, Michael Cohen, had lied about plans to build a Trump Tower in Moscow during the 2016 campaign. After insisting that he never had any business deals in Russia, Trump went back on all that and admitted he did try to build a Trump Tower in Moscow, but insisted it wasn't that big a deal.
It was during the early part of 16, and I guess even before that. It lasted a short period of time. I didn't do the project. I decided not to do the project, so I didn't do it. So we're not talking about doing a project. We're talking about not doing a project. I decided ultimately not to do it. There would have been nothing wrong if I did do it. If I did do it, there would have been nothing wrong. That was a project that we didn't do. I didn't do. It was just reported very well by Catherine Herridge, who's a terrific reporter on Fox. She talks about a letter that he signed. I don't even remember it. And it specifically talks about this deal.
Trump only knows three words, and then when he runs out, he starts drawing invisible squares with his hands. I guess you could call him a French meme. The Trump Tower project was apparently so serious that there was actually an official letter of intent signaling that Trump wanted to go forward with it. Now, you heard Trump there say he didn't really know anything about that letter, and on top of that, Rudy insisted the letter wasn't a big deal for one important reason. He told CNN there was a letter of intent to go forward, but no one signed it. Oh, come on, Rudy, that's your excuse? No one signed it? What's next? He tried to mail it, but he doesn't know Putin's address. Well, you will never guess what happened. This week, we found out that Rudy was either lying or very wrong when he said no one signed the letter.
This is the letter of intent for the proposed Trump Tower Moscow, all right? It is signed by Donald J. Trump. It's a lot of pages, man, with a lot of detail about what they wanted and how they wanted it and how he'd be paid. And there's his signature, okay?
So Trump lied about the letter, too. Mr. President, let me put this in a way you'll understand. You went on TV and said you didn't sign the letter, but now the feds might bust down your door and put you in a cell, and then we'll be stuck with President Mike Pence. So, how did Rudy explain the fact that Trump's signature actually does appear on the letter? He said he was confused.
Rudy Giuliani is commenting to our Dana Bash, a new comment, saying that he was wrong if he said that the president didn't sign this letter. He said, I haven't seen the quote, but I probably meant to say that there was never a deal, much less a signed one. So some very, very confusing statements from Rudy Giuliani. You don't want a lawyer, especially one working for the president of the United States, who is going to say two things completely opposite of one another.
You wouldn't, but that's exactly the kind of lawyer Donald Trump wants. He thinks he's psyching everyone out by putting a crazy person on TV. Trump watched Lethal Weapon and thought, I want a lawyer like that. Every Rudy interview basically goes like this.
Joining me now is the president's attorney.
Hey, you want to see crazy?
Trump is in serious legal jeopardy just as Democrats prepare to take over the House, and he's hoping he can salvage his presidency by threatening a shutdown over his wall. I'm not saying he's scared, but his pants are
tremendously wet.
This has been A Closer Look. Our guest is an Emmy and Golden Globe Award-winning actress you know for her work in the critically acclaimed show The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. The second season is currently streaming on Amazon Prime. Please welcome back to the show, Rachel Brosnahan, everyone. It's been such a great year for you since the last time you were here. You won the Emmy, you won the Golden Globe, but on Saturday, you had one of the biggest things happen. You were impersonated on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
And Cecily Strong did you, and here is Adi Bryan as Amy Sherman-Palladino, and you tweeted about it. You seemed were you very excited?
I still feel that way.
Yeah.
I'm still making that face, just...
You did not see it live, correct? Someone else?
No, okay. I was abroad, and so I was 6 hours ahead, and everyone I have ever met had sent me a text message by the time I woke up the next morning.
And then do you go into it with nerves? Because obviously people get impersonated on it. This was done with love. Sometimes they're not. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Other people were tweeting about SNL this week, and they were less happy.
They were not so thrilled about that, yeah. No, I mean... Even if it had been terrible, I feel like I still would have been thrilled.
That's great. That is the right way to go into it. One of the coolest things about season two is it opens in Paris, and this is not soundstage Paris. You guys actually got to go to Paris. We I mean, did. Was that just so exciting to shoot there?
It was amazing and so strange to start the season that way.
Yeah.
New York is a character in the show. And so to begin season two in Paris, we were very confused, but it was amazing. We ate all the baguettes, we drank all the wine, and we had a great time. It was like Maisel camp in Paris.
You got to shoot a scene where you were doing stand-up and you had a French translator. That was also fantastic.
Wasn't she amazing?
She was great, yeah.
Leslie, she was so talented. She came in for this. Well, she got the job because she did such a beautiful job just reading the part at the table read. And she jumped in, and I didn't think there were very many people out there who can speak as fast as I can, but Leslie gave me a run for my money.
That's good. In another French. Language, no
yeah,
less.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's really. You also shot in the Catskills.
Yeah.
And I've heard tell that the set in the Catskills was haunted. Is there truth to this?
Well, we heard there was a ghost. It was a very, very old resort. We heard there was a ghost. Thankfully, we didn't shoot in the building where the ghost haunted, or however that works. But we heard some
weird... And
it's weird...
nice, by the way, that the ghost stays to one building
That's
and lets
right.
you work around.
That's exactly right. We're very grateful to the ghost. We just had some weird stuff happen while we were there, and I don't...
So you buy into it?
Well, okay, so here's the thing. I did not buy into the whole ghost thing until a couple of years ago, we shot my final episode of House of Cards in Santa Fe. No, we shot it in Las Vegas, New Mexico, which was about an hour outside of Santa Fe. And
it is very disappointing. It could not be more different than Las Vegas, Nevada.
It couldn't be. And the first time I saw the sign, I really thought we were going to Las Vegas.
Yeah.
I was very confused by what
My
Las
wife's
Vegas,
family is from near Albuquerque.
Right.
And the first time I visited, you see a sign that says Las Vegas, 100
You're
miles.
Like,
and
so
I thought,
close.
Here we go. And then...
It's not the same.
It's not.
Las Vegas, New Mexico is kind of a ghost town.
It's this, they call it the city that always sleeps.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That's really good. But we stayed in this hotel called The Plaza, a little bit different from The Plaza here.
Yeah.
And you know, I walked into my room there and was overcome with this really weird feeling, which is so unlike me. I just walked in and it felt so strange. And I've never done this in my life, but I went downstairs and I sort of said to the front desk girl, I was really embarrassed about it. I kind of said, do you have another room available? Do you mind if I swap rooms? And she looked at me in what I now feel like was a really knowing way and kind of went, yes, I'll give you a room in the new wing.
Oh!
Gave me another room, and I walked into the room in the new wing and was twice as creeped out. Like, really was like, I'm having all these weird feelings. And I went back down, and I was like, I'm so, so sorry, but I'm actually going to take the first room. Do you mind? Spent the night in the first room, was like, I'm being a freak. And the next morning, woke up, and flying around set were these rumors that one of our transpo guys, big, masculine, kind of scary dude, had woken up in the middle of the night because he heard this big crash. And he kind of went, who's there? And someone said, oh, don't mind me. I'm just looking for my jewelry. And he marches downstairs and goes, what the heck? You can't send someone into my room in the middle of the night. This is completely inappropriate. And the woman at the desk went, oh, don't mind her. That's just Cassandra. She's looking for her jewelry. And we're all freaking out and running around the set going, we can't stay here. We have to leave. And I believe in ghosts literally because one of our New Mexican crew members went, oh, don't worry about it, completely harmless. If you want them to leave you alone, just leave an offering and thank them for sharing the space with you and ask them to just leave you alone tonight. So I went back to the hotel. I'm on the phone with a friend of mine who I'm expecting to go, you know, you're being a freak, stop. And instead, my friend goes, run, get out, get another hotel, leave immediately. So I'm on the phone with my friend who's going, run, and I've got these banana chips, and I'm laying them out on the table going,
banana chips?
Banana chips is all I had with me. I'm going, I hope they like organic food. Thank you so much for
sharing.
They're
like, I died 100 years ago. You can't give me potato chips?
That's right. I'm like, thank you so much for sharing the space with me. Please leave me alone.
And how did it go? Did you feel that, did you get a better night's sleep?
I did.
Okay, well.
Is the truth. So I'm a convert. I believe in ghosts, but thankfully the Catskills ghost left us to our base.
Yeah, and now I'm assuming you always travel with banana chips
always.
Just in case. Yeah.
Always.
This is a lot of people, even though you've had an accomplished career, this is the favorite role you've played. Your parents love Maisel.
They love Maisel. I am alive. I have my clothes on most of the time. I am not crying and depressed. They are thrilled.
That's wonderful.
Very sweetly, my dad calls me all the time and says that he's rewatched certain episodes and he quotes them. And this is absolutely my parents' favorite. It's really sweet.
It is great. And it's real. I mean, again, as an actor, you never know if you're going to do anything that your parents like. They might be proud of you and also watch other shows. So it's really wonderful that both.
My dad may or may not have ever seen House of Cards.
Yeah.
He's thrilled. I feel like it wasn't real until this show.
And by the way, if I were your dad, I would have trouble watching House of Cards.
Sure.
It was not a great road for you.
No,
so.
I mean, you know, I got zip-tied and thrown in the back of a van. It didn't end well.
A spoiler alert.
Do you still have to say that? It's been 6 years.
Yeah. Maybe you were the ghost.
Oh.
Wow.
This got really deep.
This is really
Hey, thank you so much for being back, and congrats on everything. Great to be with everybody. The marvelous Mrs. Maisel is currently speaking on Amazon.
Hi, everyone. It's Sarah from Late Night. I'm backstage with Rachel Brosnahan.
Hi.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So typically in these behind-the-scenes podcasts, we just follow up with questions that we didn't get to in the interview.
Cool.
But this is a little bit different. This is we've talked about that you want to confess something.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've been living a lie and I need to come clean. I actually can't believe that I'm about to tell this story.
It's about your birthday.
Yes.
Okay.
I did not, in fact, just celebrate my birthday on December 15th. I celebrated my internet birthday on December 15th. My real birthday is July 12th. And here's the story. So a couple years ago, like 6 years ago, you know, like no one really knew me from Boo, and I was working and trying to be an actor, and, you know, my 12 Twitter followers, like two of them kind of wished me a happy birthday, one April 2nd. And then the next year, a couple more people wished me a happy birthday, and I was super confused.
Like, where did this information come from?
Yeah, like why is everyone wishing me, why are six people wishing me a happy birthday on Twitter? And then I was working with a producer who casually in conversation kind of said, oh, well, we share the same sign. You know, we're both, what is that?
Aries,
April 2nd. And I was like, what? No, I'm a Cancer. And then I realized that it was on the internet somewhere, that the internet, it turns out Wikipedia, said that my birthday was April 2nd, which somebody must have just completely made up and put on the internet. I have no idea to this day where that came from. And so I called my manager and I said, the internet says that my birthday is April 2nd. Can we fix this? And he, you know, Wikipedia'd or however that works and submitted my birthday and it got rejected. Like April 2nd had become truer than the truth. This is the original fake news that April 2nd is my birthday. It became truer than the truth. And that was insane. But then, you know, part of me was like, well, you know, I get to be like the queen. I get to have two birthdays and I get to have this just for me. That's right. I'm very mysterious. And then a couple more years went by and I started to kind of feel guilty about it. And so I got on Twitter one April 2nd in 2016 and was like, guys, it's not my birthday. You know, sorry. Thank you for all the internet cake, the emoji cake. And people started going, well, when is it? And I was with a friend and I was about to come clean. And then my friend said, you could say anything. And we were feeling drunk with power. And I was like, what should I say? Like, we can say anything. And she goes, December 15th, it's the first time I went to Disney World. It's the greatest day ever. And so I got on Twitter and said, you know, who wants to change my internet birthday, December 15th? And somebody did it. They did it successfully.
On Wikipedia, too.
On everywhere. It went everywhere. It was on IMDb and Google and Wikipedia. And I was like, first of all, how did this person do this? And second of all, this is both simultaneously amusing and also disturbing that it's this easy to create fake news before it was even cool.
Exactly.
But it seemed inconsequential, you know, like the people who knew me knew when my real birthday was and, you know, no one else really cared. And fast forward 3 years to a couple days ago and it's been a good year. And I think, you know,
people are recognizing people, you.
Yeah. People went from being like, who the f*** is that to, oh, you know, and getting on the Google and figuring it out. And this year, like a lot of people wished me happy birthday on December 15th.
Like people who know you.
Like also people who know me, okay. like I won't call them out, but a couple people who knew me did text me that morning and wish me a happy birthday on December 15th. Presents started arriving. I was working on a movie. Benedict Cumberbatch bought me a book, and that was the final straw. I just melted into a puddle of guilt and came clean. So this is
your confession.
This is my confession, and also a warning. Heed, do not believe everything you read on the internet.
That is a good message. Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, I hope you feel like a weight has been lifted.
Like a weight has been lifted, and unfortunately, I'm no longer like the queen.
You're still a queen in a lot of people's hearts.
Wow. Thank you.
Including two who are here right now.
Hello.
Kyle and Elizabeth, who work on our show. Kyle is a booker in the talent department, and Elizabeth is one of our researchers, and they are both super fans of Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. So we brought them in to ask one specific sort of super fan question each.
Yes, we are two huge fans. My question is that Amy has shared how she sees the show ending and Midge's journey. Are you not aware of this?
Oh, no, yes. Oh. Okay. For a second, I was like, wait.
Wow, I thought I was bringing some hot goss.
No, you're right. No, I know the goss.
Yes, so... have you had discussions with her? Because obviously with Gilmore Girls, she was so secretive about where that journey was going to end.
Yeah, I don't know that you'll ever, if it's the same one, does it involve a lot of poodles?
No.
Oh my God, wait, what? Tell me what you know.
OMG. I'm really getting the hot scoop. About Midge ending up on Carson's sofa.
Oh, yes. I never knew how literal that was, but I can share something that Amy said to me, which I don't think you'll ever see, but I've held close to me, that she said before we started that she just kind of talked about where Midge will end up, which, you know, she will have been on Carson's sofa and she'll have been wildly successful and she'll be, you know, 100 years old and have 12 poodles in a penthouse on Park Avenue, but that she will always look back on the day before Joel left her as the happiest day of her life.
Wow.
That's very sad.
It is.
That is so sad.
Really sad that she will have had enormous successes and some failures, and she will have been incredibly ambitious and smart and bright and found this incredible voice, but that she will always hold on to that.
Wow. Something to look forward to.
Yeah. And Carson's couch. Yes. Maybe that'll become a literal thing.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Okay. Elizabeth Roberts.
Hello.
Hi.
So my first question is, do you ever hear criticism or have conversations on set about Midge's parenting style? And spoiler alert, did the kids factor into her decision to go on tour for 6 months?
That is a spoiler. Spoiler alert again. Yes, we hear criticism all the time about it. And it's been fascinating. One of the reasons that I loved the part so much and wanted to play her is because I felt like she's deeply flawed and her parenting style is certainly a part of that. And women feel an incredible amount of pressure to be able to do it all, to be superwomen, to be able to be, to have careers and to be the perfect mother. And she isn't. She's not able to do that. And it has made people shockingly angry. The number of people who have said to me, I stopped watching the show because Midge is such a terrible mom. It really surprised me. And it feels like, though, one of the ways in which we sometimes as women too have really deeply absorbed these ideas about the roles we are supposed to play, that it makes people so angry that there is this mother on television who isn't perfect and that that's not something that people find interesting about her.
Yeah, that's strange to me.
It's been really shocking.
I think the opposite, but...
Yeah. I find it really interesting that maybe despite thinking that that was the dream she wanted to have and she achieved it, that it turns out that now she's a new dream and the two things don't really work very well together.
Well, yeah. She is very young, so she still has plenty that too. Of time to figure it out.
Yeah.
And my second question was, Ethan, who plays your son, is your character's son's name, excuse me, didn't talk in season one, but now he has lines.
Yeah.
And has that made shooting difficult at all? Because it's twin toddlers who play the role,
that's right?
And it's a very fast-paced dialogue in the show.
Yeah, the boys are amazing. They were three when we started the show. Matteo and Nunzio are their names. And they have really They're so smart and really sweet, and they've grown to really love working on the show. And so we turned around one day and they could say lines on cue and they remembered them and they'd practice them at home and they don't forget them. I mean, they can talk really well. But it is challenging sometimes just having kids on set in general because I think that certainly factors into sometimes why you don't see them as much, among other things. But they can only work for a few hours at a time, each of them. And we shoot really long days and there is a lot of dialogue. And the babies can only work on set for 20 minutes at a time.
Oh, wow.
So it's hard to get them into a scene together,
yeah.
But I was so grateful. The one thing I begged Amy for was a scene with both of them awake, and she gave it to me this season. There's a scene
when she goes into the kitchen, when super
she's
fan
with,
of
when
her.
She's with Joel.
Oh, yes.
When she goes to visit Joel at his apartment. Mm-hmm. But with regards to the second half of your first question, there's a party going on outside in case you can hear it, listeners. I think in the moment, she is probably assuming that a lot of the people who help her with her children in her life will help out in this case as well. And it's not a hindrance.
Yeah. Well, we are so happy to have you here and have you back.
Thank you.
And as you know, you have a lot of fans here because I will just tell our listeners that, I almost said readers, that three other people stopped by to say hi and tell you how much they love the show. So
that's so sweet.
Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me back.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle @LateNightSeth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.